Now I want to give you a little bit of introduction. We'll stop and put the introduction here to myself and to my wife now that we've got the monkey and the fish rattling around in our head. My name is Dwayne Elmer. I'm a professor at Trinity International University near Chicago in the state of Illinois in America. My wife and I, and I'll introduce her in a moment, teach in the PhD doctoral program at Trinity. We teach in educational studies, and we also teach in cross-cultural international studies. My wife was born in Zimbabwe. I'll let her tell more about that if she wants to when she has her turn up here. And grew up for the first 15, 16 years in Zimbabwe. Is bilingual, knows the local language. Her childhood friends were all black children, and her mother and father were very early missionaries in Zimbabwe. Her father died when she was two of typhoid fever and malaria. They couldn't get him to the hospital in time, and so he was gone early on, and then her mother stayed on for well over 40 years after that, still ministering in what was then southern Rhodesia, then Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe. I, on the other hand, grew up in a farming community in southern Wisconsin, about 3 hours north of Chicago. And my friends were all farm children, and we just enjoyed each other and grew up in a very kind of farming community. My father was not a farmer, but everybody around us was a farmer. And both of us have had university training and Bible training, and both of us have traveled extensively. I've traveled in about 80 countries, done work in many of them with teaching and so on. I taught in South Africa for 4 years, actually for 5 years, 4 years at one time and then later for 1 year. Our children, our two sons, were born there. They now have given us grandchildren. We have four grandchildren. My wife was director of child survival and health education in three continents for an organization called World Relief Corporation. And so she traveled extensively, and it was her job to keep children under the age of five alive until they were 5 years old. And then it shows that they were able to survive much more easily. But at that time, 40,000 children every day were dying of a preventable disease. And it was her job to help the moms, the mothers, keep their children alive. So she got involved in nutrition, health nutrition, and helping the mothers understand how to treat diarrhea and some of the other preventable diseases. And then eventually she got into microeconomic enterprises so that mothers could make some money to feed the children. Most of these were single moms because their husbands had been killed in war or were not around. And so these were moms that had to take care of their children by themselves. And then eventually God settled us into the United States, and there we have been involved in education in cross-cultural communication for the last 40 years or so, while doing all of these other things as well. Well, if you want to know more, you can ask us as well. But that was our background. And now we're doing more of this kind of work, training, and in a variety of countries. Now, at this point, we'd like to start with some pictures to show you about how cross-cultural communication can be visualized. And this is the chart. Sometimes we learn best by seeing something, by visualizing it. And so this is crossing cultural boundaries. People grow up looking very much like the cultural background in which they were raised. If your cultural background is square, you turn out to be square. If it is round, you turn out to be round. We look like our parents' history or whatever the culture was that we grew up in. It's just the way it is. We also assume that everybody's that way. But we know that that's how we are. We don't even think about it. It just happens. When you leave behind the safety of your own culture and enter another, you do not leave your cultural baggage behind. You take it with you. And you may feel like the proverbial square peg in a round hole. So when we leave our home culture, our square culture, and enter into another culture, we don't change. We are the same. We get off the plane or off the boat or we cross by motor car and we're not any different than we were before we crossed the border. So now we are still square, but we're in round culture. Now the question is, what happens next? And this graph continues. But you can adjust. You can fit in. You can adapt yourself to this new culture. You can make the transition effectively and gradually identify more and more with your host country colleagues. The result is greater fulfillment and productivity for you and your employer. Over the years, when Muriel and I were doing work for multinational corporations, this is where we would start out. Most people in the corporate world just assume that when their company, General Electric or General Motors or Oil Petroleum Company, Shell, British Petroleum, doesn't matter. Most of their employees just think that if I go over there, those people are just like me, except they wear different clothes and they eat different food and they speak a different language, but we're really the same. And they make that assumption. And then they find out, whoa, we're not the same at all. I mean, they don't think the way we think. They don't make decisions the way we think, the way we make decisions. They don't respond to problems the way we respond. They don't handle time the same way we manage time. Everything over here is different. Now, one of the things that's important to understand is that many of us, when we experience differences, if it's different, it's probably wrong, or it's not as good. So what we do is we try to change you to look like us, because you'll want to be better, won't you? If you look like us, then you'll be good and better and right. So Vitaly was telling us earlier this today that in heaven we're going to speak Russian. See, Russian is the language of God, the language of the angels, see? Our language is best. Everybody thinks their language is best. And so we were having some fun about that that issue. But it's typical for everybody to think that their way is the best way. The word in English that we give for that is ethnocentrism. Egocentrism is my way is the best way. Ethnocentrism, our way is the best way. Our way is superior. And everybody should want to do it like we do it. Well, that's sort of the situation now as we move farther into this chart. There's one person here who acts this way in another culture. This person would be very egocentric, very ethnocentric. My way is the best way. I don't have to change. I shouldn't have to change. Because if my way is the best way, why should I change? Makes sense. There are others, however, that say that my way isn't the best way. It's one way. It's a good way for us in my country, in my culture, and we like it, and we communicate pretty effectively, and we get along pretty well, and so on. But in another culture, I should be more like them, because their way is also a good way. They like their way. They're proud of their culture. They're happy being who they are. And so maybe I should fit in more. Maybe I should change. And so this person takes a different approach. And you see the little changes that happen here? Gradually from yellow to maybe more orange. We mix yellow and red together, orange. We lose some of the edges. Here more red, more edges are gone. And pretty soon quite red and more round. Making the adjustments. Now, some people will say, why does this person still have some edges? Because nobody ever loses their home culture. You can never adopt completely to a new culture. You always have some of those values, some of those ways, traditions that you want to keep. And those are good to keep. They're part of who you are. They're part of your heritage. It's fine to hold that and keep that. Now, I have a question for you. Actually, I have several questions, so be ready. This person decides that they like who they are and they shouldn't have to change because their way is really quite a good way. How do the round people in round culture interpret this person? What do they say? What do they think about that individual?
Most likely he would say that he's arrogant. They would look at him that he's the wrong guy and his culture is the wrong culture. And since he represents all the culture, all other people who's like him is the wrong people. Mm-hmm. So that can create up to the national war idea. That's what some of the war starts with this, what I heard. So,
okay. Other observations?
Yes.
Olga?
I think they will consider him to be ill-bred, mm-hmm. to have bad manners.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anyone else want to comment? Is there a possibility of good friendship here? Go ahead.
Well, I don't think so, since the new culture would interpret him as self-conceited, mm-hmm. arrogant. Mm-hmm. Thinking of himself as the best, I don't think there is any possibility. Well, there might be some possibility if he changes, otherwise, no.
But probably only surface friendship.
Absolutely.
Not
very heart-to-heart deep. Issues, nothing like that, yeah.
What is this person, the yellow square-headed person, what is the assumption that that person is making about friendship? If there's going to be friendship, then what do you think? On what basis will there be friendship for the square-headed person?
Well, that other culture's representative needs to change, and mm-hmm. it's not going to be friendship in the real sense of this word. It's going to be acquaintance.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And if they're business partners, it's going to be just business and the communication on that level only.
Mm-hmm. So the assumption here is if we're going to be friends, you, round-headed people, must look like me. Must talk my language, speak the way. And if not, then we have just a very superficial relationship. We do our business and we go our separate ways. But there's no basis for real deep friendship, for a strong relationship that will be solid over the years. So there's a very powerful assumption. Now, the assumption that the round-headed people have is if you're going to live in our culture, you should become like us. Maybe not every way, but at least make some adjustments. I know some people, for example, that came into South Africa. And the South African English would say, rather than saying tomato, as we would in the U.S., they say tomato. Some Westerners would not say tomato because we say it tomato. You see, and I'm saying, oh, really? You can't make that much adjustment to fit in. And for them, they were holding on to their squareness so tightly. Well, if you're going to do business, it will be hard to have much trust here in that situation. If you're going to be there to do a Christian kind of ministry, it will also be very difficult to have much ministry because there's no trust. There's no ability to effectively communicate, to sit down, to have a relationship of some depth and some meaning. Well, let's take a look at this other situation then. What would the people in the round-headed culture be interpreting when they see this person changing and losing their edges, losing their something of their home culture to become more like the round culture, what do they think then about such a person? Igor?
I think they will think that this person really respects our culture. He respects us, and he is able to change, and we can make a good friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, very good. So there's now the communication of respect, that we have the possibility of a good friendship, a good relationship, something that will be strong and that will endure. What other observations might you make then? What other things might they think about this person? Consider the opposite of the situation down here. Use the word conceited and arrogant. What will they think if the person is changing, willing to change?
Since this person will be regarded as an open-minded person.
Open-minded.
He will be the one to take on some of the values, core values of that culture, and that means that he can be dealt with effectively not only at the business level, but also at the heart level. I mean, he can, at least, you know, the basis for trust, the basis for good communication is understanding. And those new cultural people of the new culture will interpret it as his desire to understand them. And when we see that desire to understand somebody else, then anything may happen, friendship, good acquaintance, heart-to-heart conversations, anything like that.
I also think that this person is smart enough to understand us.
Isn't it interesting when somebody is willing to make some changes to be more like you, you have a lot of wonderful thoughts about them. They're smart, they're intelligent, they're interesting, we can have a great relationship, they're a wonderful person, they're humble, which means that they're willing to continue to be flexible and open. So we make positive attributions, we assign positive characteristics to the people who are willing to adjust and not think that they're better than us. Very important. Any other observations before we close? Yes, Sasha.
Yeah, I think the relationships would be more natural, and soon round head people would not notice that he used to be a square head person. So the relationship would be more natural. Like in our church, there's a person who migrated from different culture, and honestly, I don't pay attention that he has different eyes, and because the relationship was very natural because he changed to our culture. So
eventually, they will not see this person as a foreigner, but he's one of us. He's with us. We don't think of him as other than like us, one of us. He's us. And that's a wonderful experience to have that happen. How do you know in your culture when someone has come to that point? I know you mentioned, Sasha, that that you just think that way. You don't see differences anymore, physical differences or linguistic differences. You just see them as one of us. But what are some other things that you're looking for as Russian people when foreigners come in and live in your community? What are some of the indicators that they're making this kind of a track rather than this kind of a track?
It's interesting. People start to wear the clothes that everybody wear, mm-hmm. and
that's the easiest part to change. Just to buy another yeah. shirt and some other trousers,
we have some
or dress or blouse. Or
we had even some funny acts on the facts there. My friend is a missionary. He was in Moscow, and he everybody Russian in the winter wear the forehead. Mm-hmm. So he bought the forehead and said, "Wow, is it? How do you like my forehead?" I said, "It's nice, but it's women's." So he had something a little bit to adjust more to understand what the difference between
men's and women.
But really, he tries. I mean, he bought this forehead, this cost of everything. But and you probably can see some of the clothes and the act and maybe even greetings or the start alone language or greet you in your own language. That's probably some of the things that they try to do, maybe with accent, but still the question. So that's kind of interesting. So
from a Russian perspective, and perhaps you've met one or two of these people, what kinds of things do you see from them that tells you that they're not willing to make some adjustment? What would be the opposite characteristics or things?
Such people who do not adjust, they try to live in their own communities, keep to themselves, I mean, to the people who are like them or from their own culture.
Yes. And it's, to some degree, that's natural. We all like to be with people who speak our language, they understand us. Even if you come from the East Coast of the United States and the West Coast, and you've never met each other, but now you're in Moscow, and you're immediately best friends because they speak English. They understand America, so we're good. But when they're still doing that 3 months and 12 months later, you see, and that's not good. So that would be one indicator. What else do you notice when people are staying in their own cultural framework?
They might still celebrate their feasts and holidays and not celebrate our feasts and holidays. Mm-hmm.
Often that's the time when everybody has a feeling of nostalgia, a warm feeling. Our nation's birthday, that day that we celebrate, or Christmas or Easter, because those are times when family came together. And we celebrated as family, and everything was warm, and everybody overlooked their differences, and everybody was friendly and happy, and delicious food, and all day long we're eating and drinking and having fun. And so our history with these special days often are related to family and good feelings. So then we continue those. But if you want to know another country, or if you want to know about what is special for another person, the anthropologists say that when you see a country celebrating, that is where the heart of the people comes out. And so in Mexico, it's certain days, and you see them with all of their color and their dance and the music. And they're not so much together as family, but together as communities in the streets and all over. But if we say, well, that's their holiday, it's not our holiday, so we'll just do our thing, we'll be by ourselves, then we fail to learn the hearts of the other people, get some glimpse into the things that they value, how they celebrate, and the way in which they express their celebration, and how it's different from ourselves. And then you begin to see new insights about this particular culture. So special events, times that are meaningful, whether we cluster together or whether we go out into the community. One of the signs of culture shock, a lot has been written about culture shock, but one of the signs of culture shock is when you withdraw into your own community. You want to be with people like yourself. So I go out and I connect and I do what my job says, but I'm never comfortable there. I never stay there any longer than I have to. And then I come back. And now I'm comfortable again. Now I'm relaxing. Now I like being here. You never have really made the cultural adjustment until you're at least as relaxed with the Russian people as you are with other Americans, if I can use your culture as the other culture here. And I remember that the time in South Africa when I was making the transition, and I was realizing that I am feeling so comfortable here, I really don't want to go back home so quickly. I like it. This is good. This is enjoyable. I'm relaxed. These are my friends. And I remember thinking, that is so good. That's what I wanted to accomplish. And people were starting to come to our home and pop in. That's when you're friends, not when they make an appointment to see you, but when they pop in. Just knock on the door and you say, who's there? And all of a sudden they come in and you talk and you have time together. And then you do the same for them. You pop in.
TVS is a nonprofit project. Our joint effort will bring about the common purpose of making Christian education available around the world and developing good Christian servant leaders. You have a unique opportunity to partner in this effort through your prayer and or financial support of TVS Ministry. For more information, please visit www.tvseminary.com.
Well, here are some indicators. We'll go one step farther in this cross-cultural adjustment process, and we'll do that when Muriel comes and takes us into the next session. Any questions before we finish? Any comments?
Yeah, I have a question. You mentioned that some people can be bilingual. Mm-hmm. And is there such a thing like bicultural, so they can be round-headed and square-headed at the same time because they somehow grew up in different cultures and or still they cannot change or something like that?
Yes, I think most children who grow up in another culture are bicultural, and so. But they call this the third culture person, TCK, third culture kid, is what we call in the United States, and the same word is bicultural, so they're referred to the same person. So very often these third culture kids are bilingual. They think somewhat in this culture. They think somewhat, this culture. They have these values, but also these values. And if they're in this culture, they live this way and think this way and speak this way. If they're in the other culture, then again the same. The problem is most of them don't know where home is. You say, where's your home? And they say, well, I don't know. Because when I'm here, this is home. When I'm here, this is home. Some who have been military children and maybe lived in five cultures and learned a number of languages, it's very difficult for them to even identify who they are. To know my identity is difficult because this is my identity and this is my identity. So in reality, they tend to think of themselves now, their identity is that they're multiple identity. They're a mixture, and the identity is some kind of combination of all of these. But it's very difficult for them to think of home because they don't have one home. I should mention, and this gets at your question, thank you, Sasha. Look what happens now. If this person, well, let's say that you have been successful and you've made the adjustments, and now you go back to live in this culture. Now what? Tell me what the issues are there.
I remember in the course that I took from Paul Hibbert, and he said when the missionary kid came from mission field after 10 years, he said, just treat your own people just like another tribe. So he said,
and that's the case too, because now this is who you are. This has become your identity, and you still have some rough edges which are part of your historic identity, but now you are in a new culture. But most of us think we're going home. Now, if you're not the MK, because the MK will be round, much more round. But if you're the missionary and you still have that mixture of square and round, and you go back into square culture, you say, oh, I'm going home now. It's going to be wonderful because I'll just fit in perfectly. Is that what happens?
Usually not. And I think it's, I know, I just feel myself, I live in another country for several years. Then I came back home. I thought, oh, God, this is my people. This is church. I was a pastor here and everything. And I realized it took me about 8 months to just understand the information field the people lived in, what they smile from, what they laugh or the cry from for the last 4 years that I wasn't there. So when I speak terms, I might not understand why they left. Even there are people I live with them longer before I left the country. So it's really, I have to learn them new again. All these 4 years somehow, and it takes me several months to understand what happens in their understanding and life during this time.
That's exactly right. You think you're going to be comfortable. You think everything's going to be exactly the way you left it. But it's not. Everybody has changed. Now you're the outsider. You're almost, not exactly a stranger, but almost a stranger. But this is called reverse culture shock. You experience culture shock going back home if you have been effective in adjusting to the other culture. If you haven't been effective adjusting, then you'll probably fit in. Igor.
It reminds me of the saying that you can never enter the same river twice. Water is gone. And it, for me, it was quite painful because I didn't expect this change. And I was not prepared for it. And although I learned about this, but it was painful, like something hit you in the back.
It's confusing. It's hard because you expect people to embrace you and all of your friends will be happy to see you. And they'll want to hear everything that happened to you when you were outside the country. And they say, okay, you have 3 minutes in church to tell us about your 5 years in America or wherever. And you say, whoa. Where, you know, and so it's a harsh, difficult adjustment to make. But they have no idea what you experienced. You become a very rich person because now you're not just one culture, you're two cultures. Most of us think of that as becoming a richer, better, more whole person because now you understand more of God's world, more of what God has given to the people of the world, and you realize that the way in which you see the world is really quite small. And then you learn another culture, another language, and the world is really quite much bigger. And as you travel, you realize God has given wonderful people and wonderful differences. If we can embrace these differences, understand them, work with them, and grow together in God's world. Any other observations or thoughts or comments before we close? All right, we'll finish this session and come back for our next session in a minute.
Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 10, 11. How to give to TVS Ministry. You may give online at efta.org/givenow. In the description place, write Russia Distance Learning, account number 24109-0150. Or make checks out to EFCA. Write on the check memo line, Russian Distance Learning, account number 24109-0150. Mail to EFCA Donor Services, 901 East 78th Street, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55420-1300. Or send your gift through PayPal for tvs.gift@gmail.com.